everyone, and welcome to the Cinema Faith Podcast for October 2015. I'm your host, Jonathan Butrin, and this week is Halloween. That's right, our kids will be out trick-or-treating this Saturday. Houses will be decorated, jack-o'-lanterns in the windows, and all across the world, millions of film buffs will be watching horror movies. I know this because I'm one of them, and that's what I did for years, until just recently, actually, but we'll get to that later. Maybe that's you. Maybe this Saturday you will be looking for a scary movie, looking for something that's going to take your breath away. If that is you, look no further than the film It Follows. That's what we'll be reviewing on our show today. I also want to discuss horror movies in general and what's really seemed like a recent resurgence of just horror as art, kind of a rebirth of the genre. And we'll also be getting to the question many of you might be asking at this very moment, which is, should Christians even be watching horror movies? Yes, we will ponder that and more on our special Halloween podcast. Now, I should start off by saying that I am not a horror expert by any means. I have seen quite a few of them, but if you were to put me up next to a horror guru, a master of the genre, I would probably sound like a novice. So if you're a horror aficionado, please forgive me. You might be disappointed by what I haven't seen, but still, you know, I've always been fascinated by horror movies. I think it's because I have dealt with fear a lot in my life. It's been one of my struggles, actually. And so, you know, with me, it's always like, I'm always thinking in the back of my mind, what's the worst possible thing that could happen right now? It sounds horrible, but you know, wherever I am, in the office, at the supermarket, you know, driving in the car, I think, what is the worst possible way this could go down? And that's really what horror is all about. It's presenting a worst case scenario to any number of situations. And so I think that's why I've always been drawn to it. And so, you know, I've watched the classics. I've watched a lot of horror movies in my day. In fact, there was a period of my life where that's pretty much all I watched. And I'm not really proud of that, but I just, you know, one right after the other, I would devour those lists that you can find on the internet, top 10 horror movies, scariest movies of all time, on and on. I just kept watching them. And I did get convicted about that after a while. And, you know, now don't get me wrong. I think that there truly is a place for horror in a film diet. If you're a film buff and you are, you know, you love the medium and you want to consume movies on a regular basis, I think there is a place for horror as a Christian who loves movies. I do. And I think there's a lot of people who would want to discount the entire genre, and I don't think you can do that. I mean, in the same way that you can't just throw out comedy or drama just because there's a few movies that are deeply offensive and cross the line, there is value in horror. And I think it's because, I mean, if you think about life, there are some really legitimate things that are scary about the world we live in. I mean, they're realities that we face. There are things that can go wrong. There are tragedies that we deal with every day. And there are also some dark forces in the world. If you think of demons, we as Christians believe that demons are very real. They are a very real presence in reality. And if you are going to treat that subject with any sort of truth, you need to present it for the scary reality that it is. You can't dumb down something like that and turn it into a G-PG affair and say that you have dealt that topic justice. Demons are scary, and when you're dealing with something horrifying like that, you need to treat it as such. You need to treat it as a horror element. And so, you know, I mean, especially if you think about it, if you're not walking with Christ, if you don't have that peace and that comfort and that power that's working inside of you, I mean, demons are even more terrifying. They're already terrifying if you're a Christian coming up against demonic forces and activity. But think about if you have no God in your life whatsoever. I mean, that is an all-consuming oppression. And if you're going to depict that on screen, that's going to be a horror movie. There's no question about it. And the Bible is filled with encounters with demons. And I think we really brush over just how scary that is. Like how scary it would have been for the disciples to encounter things like that. You know, our Bibles they're filled with chapters and sections and verses, and it kind of becomes so tidy that it's easy to just keep moving on to the next thing and the next thing that we lose just slowing down and really putting ourselves in that moment and in that situation. And there's really nothing benign about coming face to face with a demon. And if you look through the Gospels, Jesus and the disciples did just that on numerous occasions. And that was the stuff of horror movies. There's no question. But having said that, a bit of a defense of the genre, I will say I think there is some caution that should go into consuming horror movies. Two points of caution in particular. So first off, I think as a Christian, horror should be a small part of a film diet. Okay, if you are regularly taking in movies, horror should occupy a small part of that. I just think balance is important when it comes to something like this because negative things do affect us. I mean, science proves that. There's tons of studies on this. Just consuming negative things, even if they're truthful things, can have an effect on our emotions, can have an effect on our hearts. And really think about this. When it comes to music, you know, there's some bands out there that are kind of depressing, for lack of better words. One of my favorite bands of all time is Radiohead. I think they're just musical geniuses. Kid A is one of my favorite albums of all time. And the thing about Radiohead is they're not offensive by any means. Basically, Radiohead talks about things that are extremely important and extremely real. They cover problems like their lyrics will talk about fear. It'll talk about technology and how it's coming in between relationships and how it's getting in the way of things, how our mass consumption and consumerism and our lack of care for the environment is leading us towards our own doom. And these are things that are really important things, and they're really truthful things, but that makes their music, you know, kind of depressing. And if you listen to Radiohead all day nonstop, you are going to be depressed by the end of the day. There's just no question about it. I mean, it's the same thing as if you just listen to the 24-hour news cycle, you know, all day, hearing about all the stabbings and the murders and the explosions and terrorism in the world. You know, it just starts to add up. And so I guess what I'm saying is we need balance. We need moderation when it comes to the horror genre. I don't think it should be a huge part of what we take in as Christians. We need to sort of sandwich horror with more positive, more beautiful things. So that's one point of caution. And secondly, there's a disturbing side of the horror genre that I think should flat out be avoided at all costs. It's called, I think the official term, well, not official, but I mean the unofficial, really, term that's floating around is torture porn, quote unquote, which is a pretty crude term. But basically, it's movies, horror movies that are all about depicting some sort of serial killer or something that is basically doing horrible things to people. And then the movie really just zeroes in on that, on a victim being tortured in the most grotesque ways possible. And this has kind of become its own genre. And I think it's very distasteful and offensive. And this really kind of began with Saw, and maybe it was like this before. I'm sure, again, I'm not speaking as an expert on horror, but for me, I remember distinctly a new wave of this ushering in with the Saw movies, which where you had Jigsaw coming in, and he would set up these elaborate traps for his victims that basically give them a choice to do something horrible. To get their freedom. So you can be completely free and walk away, but you have to cut off your arm or something worse than that. So that's what these movies were. It's kind of these sadistic sort of games, and that's what you're supposed to take this sort of delight in, is how far will Jigsaw go and how far will these people go. And I do not think there's a lot of value in that. I think it appeals to something very base inside of us that should not be fed. And then, of course, that went on to the Hostel movies, which amped up things even more. You had these movies of people being bought on the black market, basically for the sole purpose of being tortured. And you had the I Spit on Your Grave remake, and just a whole bunch of these line of movies that fall in this genre that are not even remotely art. They're really just about how far can we go? How much can we push the boundaries of everything that is good and in good taste? How much can we shock our audience? When will we get them to turn away or throw up? I mean, that's basically what these movies are like, and that is not something I don't think a Christian should be participating in. I think there's a point where you just have to go, what am I watching? And I did consume these movies for a long time, and I felt horrible about it, honestly. I mean, I didn't at the time, but like I got to the point. I distinctly remember there was one point where, you know, I was getting these movies in on Netflix, and I just was watching this some German foreign horror movie that was supposed to be one of the most disturbing movies ever, and I just got halfway through it, and I was like, seriously, what am I doing? Like, this is not good. There is nothing good about this. There's nothing artistic about this. This is absolutely disgusting. And I just turned it off. I never finished the movie. And I just said, I got to stop. I got to take a huge break because this is awful. So, you know, just as Christians, I just can't imagine that we could be okay with taking pleasure or delight in people's sufferings, in watching people be tortured. There's no value in that. So, that's, I think, a huge point of caution. You know, Eli Roth is probably become the king of those kind of movies, which is kind of sad because he bursts on the scene with Cabin Fever, which I actually like. I think it's a good movie. You know, I mean, it's campy. It's a B movie. It's kind of got that teen romp all over it. So, I mean, it's a little offensive in parts, but overall, I think it was just a really ingenious concept with this whole, it's basically these teenagers go into the woods in this cabin and they contract a virus and they're passing the virus around to each other. And that just brought a whole new angle on things. And it was really creepy, and it was also kind of funny. And he just had a really fresh tone. And I remember that. And then he went into these Hostel movies, and it's just, I lost all respect for him. Because those movies were horrible. I mean, Hostel 2, I swear, there are things in that movie that I don't know how it got rated R. I really don't. I don't know how the MPAA did not rate that movie NC-17 seriously. There's a scene in that movie I'll never forget. I wish I'd never seen it. And basically, I can't even describe it to you. Like, to say it out loud would just offend all sensibilities. I can't even say it out loud. So that's just how bad that movie gets. And that's what happens when your intention, clearly, was Eli Roth's intention, is to just push the boundaries as far as you can possibly take them. You're going to get to things like that. And I just think it's disgusting. And there's really no value in that. But there is value in horror. Again, there are horrifying realities in this world. There are evil forces that are dark, they're scary, and to present them any other way is not being truthful. And when it's done right, when horror is done how it's supposed to be done, it can be just as artistic as any genre out there. It doesn't have to be cheap. It doesn't have to be gross. It doesn't have to rely on shock tactics. It can still have character development. It can still have genuine emotion and truth. So, and I've seen this in the last few years, as someone who's kept tabs on the genre, I've seen a revival of this where horror has begun again to be a voice of art in the medium. And I think it's great. So we had that really dark spell of torture porn with Saw and Hostel, and everything became about that, which was really unfortunate. But there's been a change. There's been some up-and-coming directors that have breathed new life into horror. The first one I noticed was this guy named Ty West, and his first movie was called House of the Devil, which I saw a few years ago, and I remember for the first time in a long time, I was just actually scared at a movie again, which sounds so simple and basic for horror, but I mean, that's what had happened when you had this just over and over again, this plethora of Saw movies and Hostel movies is like, it stopped being about like actually creating an atmosphere of horror, and it became about just being gross all the time, and you didn't go to those movies to be scared anymore. And it was just really refreshing to watch House of the Devil and actually like, wow, this is crazy, like what's gonna happen next, and I'm on the edge of my seat, and there's actually hairs raising on my arm. It had been the first time in a long time that I'd experienced that. And Ty West really understands mood and atmosphere, and he gets like the basic elements of horror. He really does. And his follow-up to House of the Devil was The Innkeepers, which is a great ghost story about these two, this guy and a girl in a hotel that are on like night shift basically, and they start hearing and seeing things. It's really a great ghost story, and it's also funny, and that's what he brings to the genre, kind of like Eli Roth did with Cabin Fever, but a lot more maturely, where it's just a nice balance. Like Innkeeper starts off is basically like just a lot of comedy and banter, and then things start happening, and it's like you're almost caught off guard, and it works really well when you can have that balance. And Ty West gets it. He understands that, and he has really provided a bit of a resurgence. That's when I first started noticing it. And the last year, we had The Babadook, which was a great horror movie, and again, artistic. It wasn't about just things that go bump in the night. It was basically ultimately about this woman in a grieving period and going through horrible things with her son who had a disability, and that's where the horror came from. And I just think that is so truthful and so real, and it's such a great take on that. And then this year we had It Follows, and basically, It Follows is one of the best horror movies I've ever seen, and that came out this year. It came out in March. I remember seeing it in the theater, and it was a great experience. Definitely a peeking through your fingers experience in the theater. But now let me say up front about It Follows. This is a movie that most people shouldn't see, all right? Just going to be totally blunt. It's an extreme movie. First of all, it's legitimately terrifying. There are some will tell you that it's not, but I think it was. I was scared throughout it. It's very intense, and also the subject matter is provocative. Okay, so basically, this movie is about this girl named Jay who has sex with her boyfriend, and she gets passed something from him that sort of puts a target on her back for a demon or a set of demons or a demonic activity. Basically, from that point on, she has a target on her back, and there is a demon that is tracking her at any moment. And it can take any form of human, but it comes in the form of a human. So it can be a stranger, it can be your mom, it can be your sister. And this demon takes this form, and it is walking towards you at all times. Okay? So, and it's only walking, it doesn't run. So basically, at any point, wherever you are, this demon is walking towards you in the form of some human. And you can drive away really far and gain ground, and you know, maybe you have a month on your hands where nothing will happen, and it's because it's still walking towards you. But it will never stop. and it is always walking towards you. And the only way to get rid of it is to pass it on to someone else through sex. Maybe sex with someone else and passing it on to them. But if they die from the demon, because when it touches you, it grabs hold of you and will kill you, and then it gets passed, then it goes back down the line. So then it would come back to following you. And if you die, it goes back to following the person who gave it to you, and so on. So there you go. That's the plot. And I know that sounds crazy, okay? Let me just say, this is one of those times where a movie sounds worse than it is. I mean, don't get me wrong, it is a very extreme movie in a lot of ways. Again, a movie most people will not and shouldn't watch, but the plot sounds more edgy than it actually in execution is. Like, this isn't a sex romp at all. There isn't some, you know, shot of a girl whipping off her shirt to cheesy music. This is like, they take the subject matter very seriously. The sex in the movie there's no nudity associated with it. You understand what's going on, but it's not done in a titillating manner. It's not erotic, you know. Basically it's handled with the utmost maturity, even though at its core the subject matter is provocative. There's no question about it. And you know, we're a website that doesn't focus on content a lot because we think it's distracting. Just focusing on the surface of a movie is just, I don't think there's a lot of value to that. We want to go deeper. We want to deal with the deeper themes underneath. But there are times where a movie is extreme, and it's worth a note of caution that you should do research before you watch this. And for a lot of people, it's not going to be a movie that you want to watch, and that's totally okay. You know, that's totally okay. And so if that's you, then maybe it's time to sign off on this particular podcast, since we're going to talk a little more about the movie. But if you want to hear more, and it is you that would enjoy it, then stick around, because here we go. So basically, It Follows is a great horror film. All right, there's no question. If you're looking this Saturday for a scary movie to watch that is not only just scary, but is artistic, It Follows is your movie. All right, this is it. The movie plunges you into the action from minute one. I mean, right away, you are wrapped up in this just overwhelming atmosphere of dread. You start off with this another character who isn't the main character, and she's running from something, and you don't quite know what it is yet. And the first thing you notice is that no one can help her. I mean, her own dad comes out of the house and says, you know, honey, what's wrong? How can I help you? And you just see it in her eyes. Like, her own parents cannot help her. There's no one who can help her. She is alone. Whatever it is she's fighting it alone. She's completely helpless. And that's the mood of this film, and it really gets to you, because you realize that this person who has this, the people can try to help them, but really they're the only ones who really get it, and who it's really affecting. And this tone is really amplified by the music. My goodness, the music in this movie, it is so great. Like, it's hard to describe. I mean, there's a lot of like synth tones, but it's really like everything but the kitchen sink in this soundtrack. I mean, you've got, you know, sometimes the music gets really loud and there's like a dun, 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 dun. There's like drums, there's like everything in this music. Sometimes it's soft and introspective and eerie, and then sometimes it's really loud and in your face. You notice the music in this movie, and it becomes a work of art all of its own. It's great. So we have this opening that's horrific, and then we center in on our main character, Jay, and her friends. Jay is played by an actress named Maika Monroe. I have never seen her in anything before, to my knowledge, but she was fantastic. The whole cast was a young cast, and they really just play off each other really well. Each actor brings something to their character that's unique, that makes them stand out. And in a lot of ways, I mean, this is a coming of age tale for not just Jay, but some of the other characters in the movie. And it works so much more than just on the horror level. And that's due to their performances and their interactions and how they relate to each other. So, great performances. You know, one thing I liked about the movie, too, is that you never really understand, like, what time period this takes place in. I think it's on purpose because the characters are all wearing clothes that I think would be at home in the, like, 80s, early 90s. Every time they watch a movie, you know, a lot of times these characters are watching movies, it's always really old black and white movies. And yet, then you have one of the characters who's reading a book on this sort of futuristic Kindle thing. So you're not quite sure where exactly this movie takes place. It's sort of timeless in that way. And I think that's great. It's kind of cool how that was. So that's some of the artistic quality. And then you have this plot. So you have Jay who, she basically has this encounter with this guy and she wakes up and her life is never the same again. And there is a distinct moment where she passes from innocence to this advanced maturity. And you know exactly in the movie where that moment is, and they handle it so beautifully. There's this one shot that's just stunning. Where she's in the car and she's actually talking about kind of her innocence and childhood, and then something happens and you see that change, and it was just brilliant. So Jay, you know, she wakes up and catches her first glimpse of it. And now remember, the demon can take the form of any person. It can be a stranger, it can be a loved one, and if it catches you, I don't know exactly what it does, but you cease to exist. You are done. You can't let it touch you, all right? Now, one interesting thing that I'm sure people will find offensive until you think about it is that the demons come to Jay, and a lot of times they're not wearing any clothes. Like, some of them are completely naked. Some of them are half naked. And that's weird at first, admittedly. But if you think about it, like, that's fairly truthful. It's like these demons are sort of giving God and humanity the middle finger. I mean, if you think about our story, we have the fall, right? And sin and death entered the world with Adam and Eve and what they did. And God provided clothes for Adam and Eve. He provided these fig leaves from animal skins, and from then on, we have this sort of healthy shame about our bodies. Like, we're not walking around naked with each other. We understand that because of the fall, we have this covering that we need now on our bodies, and we are only able to remove that covering in the context of a lifelong commitment with another person in marriage. And so By these demons just being so cavalier about this nudity and just sort of flaunting these bodies, it's flying in the face of that. It's flying in the face of this new reality that God has is sort of instituted by clothing us. So, and if you really think about it, this shows up in the Bible. It does. Think about the tale of the demoniac. All right. Now, again, if you've grown up in church, you've probably heard this story several times, like I have, but have we really stopped and thought about what it was like to go through this? So the disciples are going in the boat with Jesus, and they're going to the other side. That's what the scripture says. They're going to the other side. And this meant Gentile country. That's what that meant. So they're going already to a place they don't want to go because Jews do not like having interactions with Gentiles. They're unclean. They're scary. And that's where they're going. So they're already going to a place they're uncomfortable with. They get off this boat and they're in like this really, it seems like a really gloomy place with graveyards, with a graveyard type place, with caves. And it just sounds horrible. And all of a sudden, they're greeted when they get off this boat to some guy who is possessed by a whole legion of demons, and he is completely naked, running around naked, possessed by demons, cutting himself with stones, so he's probably bleeding all over the place. Just think about this scene, and this is in our Bible. This is why I'm just flabbergasted when people want to just dismiss, you know, horror movies outright or anything that's negative or anything that's scary. It's like, people, do you read your Bible? Like, think about this. If you were to film this scene exactly like it's presented for the full reality of it, there is no question this would be a rated R horror movie, this scene. All right? I mean, this guy is coming around naked, bleeding, possessed by demons. It's horrific. And if you're a disciple, you want to get back in that boat and you want to run away because you are scared out of your mind. This is crazy. You know, but think about that. It's like the demoniac is naked. And again, you have this, that's the only thing I can think of is these demons are sort of flying in the face of God and humanity. And we see it again in It Follows, where it's the same sort of thing. It's part of this reality that they're coming up against. So as we see it in scripture, we see it in this movie. And so I just think about the disciples and I think about Jay going through this. It just is terrifying. And this scenario of how the demons are passed on through sex is very open to interpretation. There's a lot of theories that you could level about it. It's like, why exactly? You know, what does this mean? Is there an overarching metaphor that the director's kind of implying here about it? You have sex and then this happens to you. Is he against sex in general? So there's been a lot of theories that have floated around about that. And the director himself has basically come out and said, there is no metaphor, okay? This is the movie. You know, I had no point, the ultimate point that I was trying to make. It's just the movie. Now, maybe he's doing that to ward people off the trail. Maybe he's absolutely serious. But, you know, one of the great things about art and any good art is that there are multiple layers to it. And if it's worth its salt, there's going to be a number of ways that you can look at it and interpret it through your own experiences and through what you believe. And that's what's beautiful and great about art. So there have been a lot of great theories about it. One of them appeared on Cinema Faith about a month ago with one of our writers. Her name was Lindsay Long Joyce. She wrote a beautiful article called Trauma Follows. I'd highly recommend it on the site. And she was basically saying that in her mind, the movie was a metaphor for rape. And it's really powerful and it fits if you think about it. So initial sexual encounter that Jay has with her boyfriend is completely consensual. I mean, there's no question about that. He doesn't force himself on her. It's not some sort of rape scenario that we in the way we would think of it. But in another way, it is, because he knows what he's doing to her. He's doing something malicious to her. He's passing this horrible target that he has on his back and getting it off of himself onto her so that it won't be bothering him anymore. And he knows the reality that he's plunging her in, and he goes forward and does it anyway. He's basically raping her. I mean, she doesn't realize it at the time, but he is acting maliciously to her through sex. And it really, any time that even if Jay, you know, wants to pass it on to someone else, she's doing the exact same thing. Then she becomes the perpetrator. She's doing something malicious and horrible to another person. She's taking her pain and forcing it on someone else's. And even if you have people who want to help, you know, like some people want to help Jay and they're like, you know, I will take this off your back. I will be the one who fights the demons instead of you. Go ahead, let's do this. It's like, do they fully understand what they're getting into? How can you? Unless you're the one seeing the demons, unless you're the one who understands how terrifying this reality is, can you really process and grasp how awful what you're about to embark on is? Only the person who has the target can really understand that. Only Jay or her boyfriend could. And so by doing this act, I think it's very applicable to raping someone. And with rape victims, from what I've heard and from what Lindsay was talking about in her article, you know, a lot of rape victims, they feel alone. They feel isolated because no one really understands what they've been through. No one really understands what's going on in their mind and these memories that they have. And it's the same way in the movie with the person who is being followed. You know, people try to understand, but they can't really see what the person is seeing. They can't really feel to the fullest extent what they're feeling. So there's this sense of not quite being able to empathize to the fullest. And you have that with rape victims. And then finally, a lot of times rape victims will become promiscuous and they will use keep using sex as a coping mechanism to deal with their pain. And again, and it follows, the person who's being followed tries to get rid of it through sex and kind of keeping that up so that they can keep it off as long as possible. So you see that there. So I think the theory of rape really fits perfectly with the film, and it can be illuminating if you look at it through that lens. You know, but if you want to just take it broader and more general, I think the movie really hits on just what sex has become in our culture. Really, it's become this cavalier thing that you just do, and it's become functional and selfish, and that is not the way sex was intended to be performed by our creator. In the movie, whether it's Jay's boyfriend who was having sex with her, or whether Jay doing it to someone else, you're basically, sex has become this something that you do with an end game in mind, right? So for Jay's boyfriend, basically, I'm having sex so that I can accomplish this. I can get this target off my back. And if you think about it, that's really how sex has become in our culture. It's become about having sex so that I can fulfill this fantasy of mine, you know, so that I can fulfill my needs. That's what sex has become. It's become about pleasure. It's become about yourself, instead of what sex was designed to be, which is about two people who come together. They've made a commitment to each other for life, and out of that overflow of that love and commitment is this beautiful shedding of clothes. Like, we can return now to the garden state where we don't need our clothes, and we can be naked to each other and have no shame. And really, sex, when it's done in a way that is the height of pleasure for both parties, is when you're actually trying to please the other person. So each person is trying to please each other and serve each other sexually, and that is what makes it, sex as beautiful as it can possibly be. And sex becomes something actually less pleasurable when it's all about one person or both people just trying to fulfill their own needs and get off in their own way. That's a perversion of how sex was designed. And so we see this in the movie, where sex has become about, you know, trying to accomplish something rather than it being this beautiful, pure, joyous thing between the two people. You know, when Jay has sex with a guy who's willing to help her, try to help her with this problem, it's completely joyless sex. You just see it in their faces. This isn't this beautiful thing that it was supposed to be. That it's they're engaging in something that's cheap. It's a cheapened form of this beautiful gift that God has given us, because it's out of the context of commitment, and it's done with a goal in mind rather than each other in mind. So I think that's, if you just want to broaden out further than that, I think that's something that the movie really visualizes, and it's an important concept in our world, in a world where sex has become something completely perverse and different than how God intended it. So, so that's It Follows. I mean, this is really art in its truest form, in a horror genre, no less. And it's like we were talking about, it's treating something horrible, this reality of demon and demonic oppression, and treating it in a truthful way, and really understanding the consequences, and then talking about sex and dealing with what sex has become and dealing with those consequences. And this is what I'm talking about when I talk about this revival of the genre. It Follows is just one example of this resurgence, and it's really encouraging if you're a fan of horror films. One thing as a Christian that I've always loved about horror movies is every time I watch one, I always remember the protection I have in Jesus. That sounds silly, but it's true. Horror presents us again with this horrible thing, this worst case scenario, and it really makes you appreciate the light that we have, especially as Christians. You know, It Follows is filled with these characters that are completely powerless against this demonic force. I mean, they try to fight it, but it's a losing battle. And every step they turn, they realize that they are overpowered. And I just get overjoyed when I see movies like this, because I remember that I have a connection with the creator of the universe. And I revel in that, you know, that we have a God that we serve that at the very mention of a word can send demons fleeing away in horror themselves. That he doesn't even have to speak. Just at his mere presence, they're terrified. If you think about the story of the demoniac again, I mean, those demons, like, all of a sudden, they go from being this horrible force in this man's life to begging Jesus to be thrown into these pigs so that they could go flying off the side of a cliff. I mean, that's crazy, right? They're scared of Jesus. And Jesus is our God, and he is our protector, and he's our defender. And the fact that we have that is something I think we should remember. I know that if I'm ever in a situation like this, if I'm ever actually faced with demonic oppression, I have someone to cry out to. I'm not dealing with this in my own strength. And, you know, the Bible says perfect love casts out fear. I don't have to be scared of anything. I don't have to be scared of anything in this life. I don't have to be scared of dying, which ultimately is the worst possible thing that can happen to you, right? In a horror movie, when a character dies, I mean, that's it. There's nothing more the killer can do to him. There's nothing more that can be done from the event or the demon. Person's dead. But we don't even fear death as Christians, because we know that death is just merely the gateway to eternity. It's a continuation of the joy that we have now and the lack of fear that we have now. So that's something that horror movies always remind me of. There's this scene, it's towards the end of the movie, and one of the characters is reading from a book, and she's talking about just how terrifying the thought of death is. And she frames it as like your soul leaving your body. And to her, that's an absolutely horrific thought. That the fact that, you know, at any moment, your soul can leave your body. And maybe you even know that that's about to happen. And it gets closer and closer and closer to your soul leaving your body. And for her, that's just terrifying. And for everyone who's kind of listening to the story, you can tell they're terrified by the thought too. But that's the difference, really, isn't it? That as a Christian, I'm not scared whatsoever of my soul leaving my body. That's the most beautiful thing in the world, and that's what that's the hope we have, and it's wonderful, and it's really powerful when it's brushed up against these the reality of darkness, which is a reality. I've read some books about demonic oppression, and I remember a pastor talking one time about this encounter he had with someone. He was giving a lecture on the subject, and a kid came up to him just white-faced, talking about how he had, basically his whole life had become 24/7 demonic oppression. Like he had messed around with something, Ouija board or a seance or something like that, and every single minute of his life, he's been in terror. In terror, like in his house, he's describing how things would just fall off the mantle or start spinning just randomly, and how he would go to sleep and he would have these dreams of blood and death and like the most horrible dreams. He couldn't sleep. He couldn't just walk around in his house. Like every minute he was being followed, and this is reality, by these demonic forces. And he's just begging this guy for help. And, you know, I mean, that right there is just like what we're talking about. This is the reality for people, some people in this world, maybe more than we even realize, that they're being affected by these real forces. And, you know, if we're going to be honest about that subject, and we're going to depict something like that in one of our own movies, well, we better make sure that we're doing it honestly. And that's going to be scary. It's going to be a horror film. But that's not the end of the story. He talked to the pastor, and he was able to find freedom. And the pastor describes just the joy that this kid felt, that he could actually sleep again, that he could live just like a normal person again without this just death and terror following him around wherever he went. And that's the hope we have too. And, you know, most horror movies, admittedly, don't offer the fullest sense of that hope, that ultimate hope, but that which is true of most movies in general. You know, they present a little fraction of it, a little sliver of the feeling of it, but that's where the church comes in. You know, we have these movies that basically at the end of the day are just slices of truth. They're not going to be the whole gospel, because frankly, the gospel doesn't fit into a visual medium very well. It's something that's more spoken, and only little fragments of it are things that can be experienced. So we can't expect that these horror movies are going to end with, you know, people discovering the reality of the hope they have in Jesus, okay? It's not going to happen. Maybe in some movies, and I'm still waiting for someone to do that well, and that would be great. But the reality is you're going to present a little sliver of light at the end in most horror movies, and then the church can fill in the gaps. The church can be the ones pointing to these horror movies and saying, this stuff is real, and it's horrible, but how would you like to never have to be afraid of it? How would you like to know the creator of the universe who's more powerful than any of that? You know, and we can fill in the gaps. And that's what horror movies can be. They can be a symbol of death and destruction and suffering. And we can point and say, that's not the end of the story. That doesn't have to be the full summary of it, because we have hope in Jesus Christ. So, yeah. That's horror movies in general. That's It Follows. And there you have it. So I mentioned in my opening that I used to watch a horror movie every year at Halloween, which is absolutely true. For years I did this. I watched, it was The Shining for a couple years. Then I switched to Trick or Treat, which came out a couple years ago, which I thought really captured the Halloween spirit in a way that was not just scary, but also fun. And that's definitely a good movie to check out. But I don't know why. I just started getting, again, convicted about the ritual nature of it. It was just like, oh, is it Halloween again? All right. Time to pop in something absolutely horrible to watch. I don't know. Again, you know, clearly I'm not discounting horror. It's just, it felt weird sort of paying tribute to Halloween, honoring Halloween by watching something horrible. So I started changing it up. Just last year, I popped in Donnie Darko instead. And that was awesome. Like, really cool. If you know Donnie Darko, it takes place around Halloween. Like, the Halloween is the backdrop for the film. So it still completely puts you in that Halloween mood, but it's not something that's scary and oppressive. It's something that is a great movie. I mean, if you haven't seen Donnie Darko, by the way, please watch Donnie Darko. One of my favorite films. Please go see it immediately. But so you're able to watch something that's artistic and it's funny and there's action, but it's also scary in parts, but there's romance, and it's just like, it's a complete package of a movie, and yet it still takes place around Halloween. So maybe you're someone who doesn't want to watch a scary movie this Halloween, and there's your alternative. Watch Donnie Darko, and you will still feel like you participated in it, but maybe you didn't go all out and have to scare yourself. Or maybe you're like I was a few years ago, and that's exactly what you want to do. You want to scare yourself senseless. In that case, please watch It Follows. You will not be disappointed. So however you want to celebrate Halloween, it's between you and God. No judgment here. So those are two options for you. I'm just thankful that horror is coming back, and we're having filmmakers who really understand the genre, who understand what's special about it, and that we're moving away from this horrible torture junk, and we're moving back into atmospheric, tension-filled horror. And I love it. And I'm thankful that we can have these films that point either directly or indirectly back to the light. That horror movies can proclaim that the light has the final say. At the end of the day, darkness does not get the final word over us. We have a God who, with one word, can send demons into hysterics. He has total power over the cosmos, and that God calls us friends. He calls us sons and daughters. Isn't that amazing? Oh, it's amazing to me. That's the hope we have. And it's more powerful than any worst case scenario you can come up with. And believe me, I've thought of them all. And that's the hope I get filled in when I think about it after watching a horror movie. So hope you've enjoyed our discussion today. Stay safe this weekend. Enjoy Halloween. As always, keep the faith, my friends. I will see you next time.